Chinese central authorities have issued a guideline on urban development, including strict regulation against bizarre illegal buildings and building a better public transportation system. But what's caused controversy is the government wants to see roads within gated residential neighborhoods opened up and added to the public road system. So guys, why does the government want to strike down these gated residential area, the gates in these places, and have a new policy like this?
Well, I guess to give a little background, China started building these enclosed residential communities in cities, in urban settings, in the 1950s. And I think the idea came from the communal and more rural areas when people were gathered together for better production and better survival. And I think this has been the trend for the past six decades or so in Chinese cities to build enclosed areas for residents. But as the pace of urbanization quickens, the needs of these cities have changed also. And I think city planners are arguing that these structures sometimes challenge road systems in big cities and have created urban issues that are related to traffic and to air quality and things like that.
I think Chinese people do have a tradition of confining themselves to a certain place, like we build very high walls in our residential communities. And it's actually against the urbanization in some, like the philosophy of urbanization in some other cities. Like if we could make comparison between Beijing and New York, like only 7% of the urban area in Beijing is used for road constructions, whereas this figure in New York is 25%. And in Beijing, take another example, like there are so many cars, more than 6 million cars, they rely heavily on the ring roads, what we call Huanlu. And you couldn't see those like blood, like capillaries of the road system, because all the universities, government buildings, all public institutions or residential communities have been enclosing themselves. So the road to a large extent is cut off. And also, if you try to enclose yourself, there is no vigor and vitality. And people, if there is an open community, people tend to talk more to their neighbors. They try to, they tend to shop more as well. So they can definitely make a very great contribution for the consumption.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm just thinking about our listeners. If they have never been to China before, this may not make much sense. But for example, in the United States, you have these gated communities, usually in the suburbs, and they're closed off. Mm-hmm. But in China, these communities exist in cities, and they usually are, they consist of tall buildings. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different than what people are used to in the Western world, in some countries in the West, I guess. For example, in New York City, people live in buildings that are just built on blocks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this block can be for residential use, and the next block can be for something else. But they usually aren't closed off with gates.
Yes, that's a really good point. And that is, well, it's hard to say which is better, because in China, in these closed communities, for example, why is it good is you also get like a green belt or a little bit of area with greenery inside your little neighborhood, which you don't get otherwise. And that's kind of what people paid for as well when they're considering that they will purchase an apartment in a certain place. And now, let's say, well, this is still being discussed, I think, but if this new policy does get implemented, then I can sort of understand why some people are not happy, because they're not getting what they've paid for.
Right.
They've paid for more public space in that neighborhood, and now that is going to be gone. People are not going to just say, rest with that quietly. What do you think are some of the problems here then?
Well, it's a new idea they were exploring, right? We have been building these communities for the past 60 years, and people are used to certain lifestyle. But again, as we said, as the system does not utilize space or road systems very well in the cities, we do have to make some changes, and that I do understand. So on the other hand is that, like you said, a lot of these property owners have paid for these public space, private spaces in their communities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now if you say, I want to open them up to for public access, of course people will feel their property rights will be infringed upon. And actually under China's current property ownership laws, they are protected under these laws because these private spaces are owned collectively by mm-hmm. these property owners
right.
because
mm-hmm.
they're paid for when the developers started to construct these buildings. So I think it raises a lot of legal issues as we proceed forward. The lawmakers in China would have a lot of work to do
yeah.
to make sure that this private to public transition is made smoothly.
Right, definitely. I think legal issues will be involved here because this guideline is promulgated by China's cabinet, right, Guo Yuan, the State Council. Whereas if you look at the law, I mean, each single law here in China is passed and, you know, has got the approval of the, you know, the NPC, the National People's Congress, and which is actually superior than guidelines launched by the State Council. And as Victor has mentioned, that those greeneries or public places, or even the roads inside the residential communities, are owned by the owners. So looking to the future, there are several problems that could be emerged. For one thing, how can owners get compensation? Like, who is to decide it? I mean, even when it comes to the, you know, you want to use the roads inside the areas, but you have to clarify which roads that would be used, right?
Yeah.
So all these issues are very convoluted, I think.
Yes, it's a complicated matter for sure, mm-hmm. and especially when property rights has been mingled in there, then it's going to be a problem for a lot of people. And also, I think the way that the government has pitched this proposed policy is that we want to solve road congestion problems. We want a better urban living, blah, blah, blah. And my question here is this a good solution? Doesn't it sound like it's sort of the first thing that's come up in certain people's minds, and then it's being published like this? Because don't forget, in major Chinese cities, there are closed areas that are so huge, and who or what organ stays in there? It's some institutions that
yes.
probably are state-owned or affiliated to the government, and why is there no talk regarding them, and there's only all this what the neighborhood should do?
Well, definitely, He Yang, I agree with you on this point. Because if you wander around the Chang'an Street here in Beijing, I mean, those buildings scattered across the road are government buildings. You even know what the, you know, what those institutions are. And they have to further open up as well. Like, in Western world, you can basically freely go to the
City Hall,
freely, I think. But now in China, this is not the case.
For the most part, they have security measures, but yes, we usually like to enclose areas off for government organs or other.
But that's not the right gesture. I mean, you have to, otherwise there will be larger disparity between common public and government officials, right?
Yeah,
and I think here what is needed is a more comprehensive kind of policy.
I think we have to update a lot of things in the future. For example, in New York, where in New York City, all the buildings are just on blocks, but the city planners have been very conscientious about building greeneries, green areas in the city. So you have public parks all over the place. So you don't have these private areas anymore, but you can go to public spaces for refreshments and things like that.
Right, and also when it comes to the property management, like when we'll talk about Wuye, it definitely needs a lot of upgrade, and who will do the upgrade work, right? Is it the government's role or the owner's role, or the general public will be paying for this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about the security? Because now a lot of people want to confine themselves in certain places just because they lack a sense of security. They want more security guards in their communities to safeguard their, you know, community.
All right. Well, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. As in our discussion, you know, we see that there seems to be more questions than answers. And this is a new thing that we're talking about, the Chinese society. It'd be interesting to see what happens next. You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Yang, Victor, and Luo Yu in the studio. Coming up next, China's National Museum is deemed second most popular by a German newspaper. How can museums attract more visitors? Stay tuned for the last topic of today.
Roundtable. Connect the dots. Paints the picture. Debates the big issues. Every day from 1 to 2 p.m. on Easy FM.
You're listening to Roundtable. Do you know that, well, what museum is most visited in China? The answer is the National Museum of China. According to a ranking of the top 20 most popular museums around the world, it is also the second most popular museum in the world. What makes a museum popular? Guys, what is this ranking by a German newspaper, and what does it say?
Well, Die Welt is a German newspaper which drew up a list of top 20 most popular museums around the world. Le Louvre in France, the National Museum of China, and National Museum of National History in Washington seized the top three spots, respectively. It was the ranking of the year of 2014. The Chinese Museum also surpassed many world-famous museums like the National Museum of Natural History in Washington, the British Museum, and Centre Georges Pompidou in Paris.
I'm going to be a one-upper here and say I've been to three of these museums myself.
Wow.
I've been to the National Museum in China, the Louvre, and the British Museum, all of which are great.
Yes.
Anyway, that's just my one-upper moment.
And I've been to the National Museum in the UK as well. I think I've just one-upped you.
Okay.
Joking aside, why are you surprised that, you know, the Chinese National Museum has scored so high on this ranking, and it's even surpassed the position of the Palace
Museum?
Guoguan is my favorite museum in the world.
Also one of my favorites. I am surprised because if I'm not mistaken, I think the National Museum has a very low limit on daily visitors. And the tickets are free.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go in with your passport or identification card or whatever and just go in.
Right.
But the limit is much lower than the Palace Museum. So how can that be possible that this is the most visited museum in China when the Palace Museum is just right across the street?
That's my question too.
It's my wonder as well. But I think, you know, for one thing, we have a very vast population, and second, I think it's a must-see place as well. Like, I think together with the Palace Museum and the Tiananmen Square, it's a must-see place as well. And for another thing, there are a lot of like instructors or like tour guides inside the museum giving you a free explanation of all this stuff. I think that's one of the most important attraction points as well, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One possible explanation I have is that the Palace Museum is not one building, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole area, again, enclosed area of many, many buildings.
Right.
We have common themes for this show today. So it's not quite the same as, say, the British Museum or the National Museum, which is in one or few structures.
That
it's
is
a huge
true.
Area.
Yeah, because the Palace Museum, Gugong Boyuan, and the Forbidden City, Zijincheng, is actually the same thing in China. So yeah, it's a very unique.
So the survey
place.
May not have counted this Palace Museum as a traditional conventional museum.
Right. Even if you look at the top 20, even there's no Forbidden Palace on the list.
However, the Palace Museum in Taipei is on there.
Right, ranks the 13th.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and that museum is wonderful.
You have been?
Yes, I have.
Good.
And I think for anybody who's visited Taipei, you sort of have to go.
Of course, yeah.
Because I think what the Taipei Palace Museum has done really well is to shorten the gap between the museum and the visitor, as you feel it is a very friendly atmosphere. Of course, it's got top-notch displays, and also I think it's a souvenir shop is one of a kind. You can tell that there's so much creativity that went into there that you see all these unique, original little objects that you see nowhere else. And now I think the Palace Museum in Beijing
doing the same thing.
Has done something similar. And, well, Victor, do you have any experience with
that? I was just there last week, exactly 1 week ago, and it was wonderful. I love the Palace Museum. I love the history from the Qing Dynasty. And
Ming as well.
And Ming, right, exactly. But I like the Qing better. So it's wonderful to visit, and souvenir shops indeed offer a great selection of different things.
I think more and more museums should definitely replicate the model from the Taipei National Museum there to produce more beautifully designed souvenirs for the general public.
Yes, I think souvenirs is definitely one attraction, as 朕就是这样的汉子 is written on the paper fan I bought from the Beijing Palace Museum. Love it. Bye for now.